We're back. Hour three. Sale about an hour in. The New York breads are spinning through, and they're about a third of the way through the New York bread hips. I think I've seen one. I thought I saw one six-figure, 100,000. The Queens Plate draw is done, and 2-1 on Clayton, 5-2 on Curlin's Voyage. Those are your top two, and I guess Halo again from the Asmussen Winchell team, 5-1 third choice. So you can start to look at the Queens Plate card. Andy Serling joining us from the New York Racing Association in the afterglow of a successful Saratoga meet. Andy, you know, for speaking for players and for fans who were treated to 40 days of the Fox telecasts, Saratoga Live, thanks for everything. It was really, for not being able to be there, I think a lot of people felt like they were.
I thought we were going to talk about the Queens Plate. Got me all excited about the Queens Plate. Now you're talking about Saratoga? What happened to the Queens Plate discussion?
Well, what about what are you going to do a Queens Plate video?
Queens Plate this weekend?
Yeah, Saturday.
You're going up? You're like an honorary Canadian citizen, aren't you?
Well, 10 years in Montreal. I kind of am. I've never been to a plate.
May not let you back, but they'll probably let you in, right?
Yeah, that's true. I've never been to a plate, actually. I've been to the Woodbine Mile. That was when Tepin won her second.
I've been to two Woodbine Miles. I don't think I've ever been to Queens. No, I don't think so. I've been there a couple odd times, but I don't think ever the Queens Plate.
I assume
there's no fans anyway.
No, so it's one of those things you want to go with fans because it's you know.
Hasn't Roger Atfield won like 11 Queens Plates or some crazy number?
Yes, yes.
Won some crazy number. Yeah.
Yes, yes, he has.
So what's going on, Steve?
What's going on? It's been that was as intense a 4 days of racing between Saratoga and Del Mar wrapping up, Kentucky Downs starting, and the Derby Oaks weekend. My tongue was hanging out Monday night.
I did manage to watch a few races at Kentucky Downs. I was waiting on the set when they had the race where they didn't load the horses. I was waiting to go on. Richie was still on with Greg. And I was watching my phone, and I looked up at Richie and said, I think they just started a race Kentucky Downs, all the horses weren't at the gate. And so we reminisced about the West Point when that happened many years ago. I think it was still a dirt race back then. And they didn't load the favorite. It was like the outside, I think it was like 12 or something. And that was in Saratoga, maybe in the 80s, I think. Yeah, and I watched the tourist mile. Flavius finally didn't get a bad trip. Yeah, there was a lot of good racing this weekend. But you left Kentucky early, right?
I did, because I was excited to come home for our race, and
that didn't work out well.
Yeah, don't get me going on that, because I'll say something I'll regret. But,
So let's talk about the Derby.
All right. Your take.
I think that as far as 'tis the law, you know, he's a really good horse, but he'd also had, you know, relatively soft trips against somewhat overmatched competition in his races, and they were overmatched because he's very good. But, you know, he was able to sort of stalk in an easy spot in those races, and the paces were relatively tepid. They weren't crawls, but they weren't fast. And so it sort of made his job easier. And, you know, and because of the scratch of King Guillermo, it put Manny in a position where he had to, you know, be the horse going after Authentic. And obviously, if he hadn't gone after him in any respect, he wasn't going to beat him because he gave it his best shot. And the pace was hotter than, you know, any pace he had dealt with. And it turned out that the horse that he was chasing was pretty good. So I think that his luck ran very well in the race. I don't think he lost anything in defeat. He just ran to a horse whose game he had to play, who was better than he was on Saturday. I'm a little dubious that over time, Authentico proved to be better than 'Tis the Law, but I suppose anything's possible. And as far as Authentic, you know, even when Charlton and Nadal was around, there were a lot of people that said Authentic was the best of the three. And I wasn't in that camp that thought he, you know, disgraced himself in the San Anita Derby. He didn't break, and he didn't have the best trips in there. Like a lot of people, I was underwhelmed by his Haskell, and I had severe doubts whether he'd get a mile and a quarter, but he did. So, you know, it's not like he ran a 120 buyer. The way people were talking, you'd think that, you know, somebody shot him out of a cannon or something. He ran a 105 buyer. He's already run triple-digit buyers before, so he improved a little bit, and he got the mile and a quarter. That's what happened here. And he caused the other top horse in the race to have to play his game. And, you know, I thought I was rooting for Tis the Law, but I think from a big race perspective, it was a satisfying result, right? The best horse won.
The best horse on the day. Exactly.
To walk away from races satisfied when the best horse that day won. Yeah. So obviously, the book is still open, and who the best horse will be over time, but right now it's Authentic. And there's no shame in running second, as Tis the Law did. We were all sort of hoping he'd win, and we have a chance to complete the sweep in Baltimore, but that's horse racing. You know, good horses lose, and good horses win. And on Saturday, a good horse won in Authentic. So I walked away from it, you know, disappointed Tis the Law didn't win. I was really hoping he would for Barkley and Manny. But he didn't. And so that's okay. You know, if you had a bad trip and something had happened, you said, geez, he was best, I'm frustrated, then you'd feel dissatisfied. But I don't think you'd feel dissatisfied with that race. So, you know, if King Guillermo hadn't been scratched, it might have been a different scenario. He might have won, but he wasn't. And that doesn't mean that he was unlucky.
So, well, Fold In Art Collector not being available either.
Right. And I'd like to be Tom Drury and Bruce Lunsford, who were, you know, days away from having a chance to win the Derby and didn't even get a chance to run, much less win or lose.
Right.
Fortunately, it sounds like he'll be back for the Preakness. And, you know, we talked about the Preakness months ago, and I was certainly of the opinion it was going to be a big field and one of the more interesting Preaknesses in years, and it seems like it's playing out that way. So that's cool.
It's going to be a big, bulky group.
Whether or not Tis the Law runs, you know, that's between Jack Dalton and Barkley Tag. I'm sorry they're being played out a little in the media. I'm sure that's not the way Barkley would choose to do it. But, you know, I think an owner, has a right to, you know, owners pay the bills. They have a right to have their say in where their horses run. But I think that if you were to look back at successful partnerships between owners and trainers, owners defer their trainers, especially a trainer like Barkley Tag, who's been around a long time, and he knows what to do with a good horse. And, you know, you can have that debate, and listen, if a trainer says, I'm on the fence, you know, you do whatever you want, that's one thing. But I think if a trainer is, you know, strongly opposed to one situation or the other, you're probably better off listening to your trainer. But that's just my opinion. You know, the owners can do whatever they want.
No, I agree. I agree. We'll see. We'll see what the, you know, how it plays out. Separately, did you get a chance to see, if we go into the field just a tiny bit, the work that Marshall Graham did on the footage and the, you know, the adjusted times based on, you know, feet per second. And Honor AP, I'm sure that they'd love to have it over with, over again. You know, to come out of that, to kind of walk out of the gate and
he didn't
put yourself
really walk out of the gate. I don't think you can translate the minimal amount of trouble at the start to the fact that the horse just completely dropped out of the race.
Right, that's what I mean.
And, you know, what happened to his speed? This wasn't a slow horse before. Yep. So what happened that all of a sudden he's trying to come from, you know, 20 plus lengths behind? I don't understand how they figure that tactic's going to work. And, you know, that the narrative that, you know, obviously because John Sheriff trains it, you know, there's misguided people that are going to somehow make a Zenyatta comparison. You know, Zenyatta dropped out far out in the early running of the Breeders' Cup Classic because she's slow early, something I said on your show would happen in an inane discussion with some people insulted me after the race, who might remain nameless and might not, who have misbehaved on a number of occasions. But, well, it's true. But you know, slow horses, you know, they fall behind their fields like she did. She handled the track. It wasn't some nonsense that, you know, that people made up. Why was he so slow? I mean, that's why he lost, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he made a long, sustained run, and he was kind of the only horse that did it while wide the whole way. But on the other hand, it was a relatively quickly paced race, and I think at the end of the day, it was a field full of horses that just weren't very good and didn't really show up or run at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I think his performance is a little exaggerated because he just happened to be the only horse that didn't need running from the back of the pack. And are you really eager to bet him going forward if he's going to continue to drop 15 and 20 lengths out of the races all the time? Why did that happen?
I don't know. And that's a question that we got to ask John. Because they certainly went. They went fast enough. No, he's not. He hasn't been mentioned. They certainly went fast enough.
What are they waiting for?
Seriously,
like the Malibu? My God, the horse has run, what, all of five times? Seriously.
No, I hear you.
I don't understand, Steve. Explain to me how that horse wouldn't be playing towards the greatness.
I can't give you an answer. I'll reach out to John. We'll see what we can get some thoughts.
I mean, maybe he is. They just haven't mentioned it. But like, I don't understand. What were they training him in all year for, if not to run in these races, right? I mean, as long as he's not hurt.
Yeah.
Is it like an undercard race on Breeders' Cup Day or something they're running, like the Ack or whatever? The Damascus? I don't know. Where is there, you know. Den Ali?
We're going to run out of time if I don't press forward. Let me get a take on some of the other highlights, including She Dares the Devil and the Oaks result.
You got me. No idea where that race came from for that horse. You know, it was an unusual Oaks because you had two or three very good horses, depending on who you were. I thought it was three. Speech didn't show up. She Dares the Devil had never shown anything close to the race she ran. So congrats to Brad Cox for getting her to run that race that day. I tip my hat to anybody that liked her, but I have no idea how you could have actually had a legitimate reason for liking her in that race. She was just proven to be significantly slower than the rivals, and it's not as though the race came up slow. If the race came up slow, I'd say, well, nobody showed up, and so she won. But no, it came up pretty fast. I don't think there are a ton of triple-digit buyers in recent winners of Tucky Oaks. I thought Kameen would have a relatively easy time with the field. I was completely wrong. I didn't expect her to have a real problem with the distance, and I don't think that she showed that she can't handle the distance whatsoever. I think she still ran a buyer in the high 90s, but she's clearly better going shorter. So I do think that while Kameen is a very, very talented horse, her best races lie ahead in shorter races. You know, maybe, you know, when they stretch, if they stretch her out next year in a race like the Ogden Phipps at a mile and a 16th around one turn, that's a slightly different story. But I have my doubts that she's going to be as brilliant going long as she was going short. I don't see who would argue with that. As far as Swiss Skydiver, I think she ran well again. I she always runs well. She's coming 20 days after winning the mile and a quarter Alabama, and she still ran one of her faster races. No disgrace in that. She's a really terrific horse that shows up. I heard an idiotic narrative that she got a bad ride or bad trip from Tyler Gaffalione. My God, if only I could best horses that get bad trips like that every day. I thought she got a perfect trip and just wasn't quite good enough. I don't know. I think it ultimately a surprising horse. A horse ran a surprisingly good race in there. And if she hadn't, it would have been Swiss Skydiver and Gamin, and people wouldn't be knocking. You know, they'd be saying, well, I thought Swiss Skydiver was better. I thought Gamin was better. There were two different camps. I was in the wrong camp. But I think the surprising thing is the winner ran as well as she did, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, she had been, she had been making steady, steady progress, and she needed to improve more time.
She had never been making the kind of progress that she would have gone from 86 buyer to a 101 buyer and beaten the likes of Swiss Skydiver and Gamin. It's a surprising result. I think to pretend that there's some sort of logical explanation for it is to argue against any of the basic tenets of handicapping. Come on, Steve. Yeah, I know.
All right. Let me get a couple of other things in quick before we turn to Saratoga closing, and that included Digital Age. What a nice win for him in the old Forster. You had a couple of closers sit and wait and go in and get up late. Bell's the One nailing Serengeti Empress, who ran just as courageous a race as you'll ever see.
She ran too well to lose. Yeah. You know, Digital Age, I think I've said on your show before, was a horse that was extraordinarily unlucky in a number of races last year, particularly the Hollywood Derby and other races, and was eventually going to knock it unlucky, and that's all that happened. He's always been a good horse. Javier gave him a great ride, and he ran. Back to this, ran very well in defeat, but Digital finally had his day where he just didn't get unlucky, so you know, that was very satisfying. I felt really bad for Tom because Serengeti Empress did run a winning race, not knocking Bell's the One, but Serengeti Empress ran huge in there. As did Beau Travail. Is that a horse? No, it'd be the movie.
Beau Recall.
Newspaper record. I don't know. Maybe, you know, she'd been better off sort of letting her have her head and run a race, but I don't know. Maybe Beau Recall just beat her, but she certainly newspaper didn't run as well as she'd run those two races at Belmont. And, the races in Saratoga were good this weekend. I was really happy to see Global Campaign run as well as he did. I think a lot of people, it's funny with Global Campaign. When he first started and he ran, like, I think his first couple of races, there was an enormous amount of hype around him. And as usual, I just scoff at hype. But then he ran fifth in the Fountain of Youth, and he ran extremely well in that race. And I think there's a lesson in there for people that don't understand how well Hidden Scroll ran in that race when he finished ahead of him. And Hidden Scroll may have fallen apart after that race, but to misunderstand the enormous amount of talent that he had at one point in his career is just, that's just silly. But Global Campaign ran extremely well. And then I think he won the Peter Pan his next start, right? And he ran very well that day. The triple digit buyer, he chased a pretty quick pace. He was very good. And something obviously went wrong in the Jim Dandy. And like good trainers do, Stanley Huff, obviously, they put him on the shelf. I don't know what his issue was. I don't know what kept him out. Who knows? But came back, and he's won three or four races since coming back. Obviously, things didn't go well in that race. Churchill to blame. He just didn't really seem to get out of the gate. But he's run very well in all his races. And, you know, the more I talk about the race before it on Saturday, the more I felt stupid for not picking him over Tastis, who's not a phony and not some sort of fraudulent money burger. He's just a decent horse that runs in big races and more often than not has either had trouble trips or has run to horses that ran better than him. And he ran to a very good horse that ran better than him on Saturday. And that was a really good race. And also, you know, not unlike the Derby, because of the nature of the race, because the chief rival of Tastis was controlling speed, Tastis was taken a bit out of his game and had to sort of go after him. And he had to play Global Campaign's game. Well, Global Campaign plays his game pretty well. And I thought it was a really terrific performance by him. And in a year where there's not exactly a lot of Tigers out there, I can't see any reason that Global Campaign isn't in the conversation of the Breeders' Cup Classic. I'm not saying he's the first, second, third, or even fourth choice, but he's not 20-1, that's for sure.
How about the two-year-olds?
I thought Jackie's Warrior was sensational. I mean, he was sensational in the special, and he was sensational in the hopeful. I know the figure was 95. I wonder if it could have been higher. Certainly couldn't have been lower. He was really good. Reinvestment Risk ran very well to be second. You know, it's not like he you know, it's not like he ever gave up. He just ran to a better horse in that race. I mean, geez, I thought Jackie's World was sensational. And the filly who won the Spinaway, whose name escapes me.
Vequist.
What's her name?
Vequist.
Zequist?
Vequist. V-E.
Vequist. Thank you.
Yes.
She was very good, too. A maiden that came up. And I don't think we've seen a lot of particularly compelling two-year-old fillies so far this year. She looked good to me. She ran a buyer in the low 80s, so yep. I thought she looked good as well. And we saw some promising two-year-olds, some turf runners over the weekend, a couple of maiden races on Monday. Chad Brown ran 1, 2, and 1, and then Motsource beat Chad Brown's horse in the other one. I thought Todd Fletcher, was it Sunday or one of the days we could have a nice-looking two-year-old also that won. I can't remember. I think maybe it was Saturday. So we saw some of them. We saw some decent two-year-old races, right? I mean, maiden races, I feel like. Mata had a couple. He won with that. The horse ran third to reinvestment risk, and then he went with a filly first-time starter for Godolphin on Sunday.
Speaking of which, what about that Love Struck and the incident with him?
On, they should have taken the horse down. You know, they took down a Karovic horse on opening day, and justifiably so, named Price Talk for coming out, and then they left that horse up, and they, in their infinite wisdom, decided that it didn't affect the order of finish. So I guess the precedent's been set that you can just plow into other horses in the stretch, and if the stewards decide that horse was going nowhere, it's okay to plow into them. It's not. The horse should have come down. So, I usually agree with their call, so I thought that was absurd. But I'm probably a little biased. But
no, I don't think that was the
prevailing. Other words, the stretch is supposed to be allowed, but I guess we have sort of. They're usually pretty consistent. I don't think that call was consistent with the kind of calls they've made in the past. So I was surprised.
No, that was the prevailing. I think that was the prevailing opinion. I'm waiting to get the. Get Steve to confirm it, but you had to be delighted with Thin White Duke's win.
Yeah. People that don't know, it's Steve Chris' horse. You know, it's with his friend Ken Durrett and Phil Gleaves, and Phil bred the horse. Yeah, that was great. I thought Steve was crazy for running in there. Not that it was a tough field. He was right. I mean, he was obviously right in retrospect, but he was also right beforehand that it wasn't a particularly strong field. You know, I was ready to tell him that he's another smart guy who got a horse and started acting like an idiot. There's a long list of that happening, but no, it was great. Yeah, that was terrific, and I was really happy for Phil too. Who's one of the good guys in racing for sure. So we're looking forward to rooting for Thin White Duke throughout the fall.
And I sent Steve a congratulations, and I said better than betting, or I said what a great thrill, and he said better than any pick six hit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd been with them when the horse ran in the turf race. They came up for it, and the race was over, and he got beaten right at the wire. It was like, oh god, ugh, excruciating. But he's a really nice horse, you know. I'm really glad to see them doing well with him. That's good, and it's a home wreck for Phil, I guess.
That was
a good moment. There are a lot of good moments. You know, the meet's been the racing was terrific, and the stake races, as they you know do every year, I think really delivered a lot of exciting and good performances. You know, we can keep dwelling on the idea that nobody's at the track, and so it's a different experience. And that's absolutely true, and it's heartbreaking. There's so many things in life that people enjoy doing that we've taken for granted. We spend our lives sort of working to be able to do these things, and then we can't do almost any of them right now, so it's tough. And Sarah's a good example of that, but I think it's terrific that we came here, and one of the things that is left out in the discussion, and there's, as usual, a plethora of bad opinions about it, it's important that we came to Saratoga. It's important for the town that we came here, and the town has a great deal to offer outside of the racing, but for those of us that were around town at different days and different nights, there were people out, and you know, the restaurants were doing decent business, and obviously it's not the same as it would have been had, you know, it had been a normal situation, but it wasn't a normal situation whether we were racing or not. So I think it's important that we were able to do our part for this community. And so it's a very symbiotic relationship between us and the town. The town is, you know, the greatest towns, in my opinion, you could imagine. But also, if we didn't come this year, the conversation would be, well, why would we think they'll be here next year? And by coming, there's no conversation. It's clear that whatever the circumstances are, we're going to be here. So that's one of the important aspects of being here, is to have the continuity. So there isn't a question of our commitment to coming to Saratoga, you know, through thick and thin. And, you know, a lot of effort went from a lot of people to make this happen and to keep it safe, and we did. And, you know, I think that's something that a lot of people at NYRA, not myself, and a lot of different people not at NYRA can be proud of. So I'm glad it worked out, and obviously the numbers showed to anybody that isn't deranged the importance of having been here as opposed to staying at Belmont. We would have been lucky to handle 60% at Belmont of what we handled up here. And being up here, it was an all-around good. So I'm very happy that the meet went as well as it did, obviously, and a bit relieved that it went as well as it did, but it seems that people enjoyed it in the ways that they could. And I think that's the one lesson that we're learning in the pandemic, is to try to enjoy the things we can in whatever way we can, as opposed to fretting about the ways that we wish we could.
Nicely put. Andy, a couple of notes within the overall we should just touch on. And of course, obviously, you know, on the top end, we know the big outfits that had, you know, that had great meets, but there were a couple of people that really stood out, and that included Jimmy Bond, who had a spectacular season.
He did. Yeah, I saw Kevin, his son, I want to say, in the last few days of the meet, and he said, oh, we have to try to keep it going, and I said, you don't have to win another race for it to have been a good meet. So, they did have a great meet, and that was nice to see. It's a true family affair with Kevin and Ryan and Jimmy and Tina as well. So, yeah, that was great. Yeah, I was really happy for them. I've been friendly with Jimmy for a long time, so I was thrilled to see them do so well.
Want to also mention, I think I mentioned it yesterday, Jorge Abreu, and there's a couple of parts to this, to his success, and part of it is the generosity of Chad Brown and his some of the owners to send horses to him, and that shouldn't be lost on people. But he had a terrific meet.
He did, and he deserves all the credit for it. No question about it. His horses ran all meet. He's a little unlucky down at some Kentucky Downs, not to maybe win that that stake on with the colt. Shay or something like that. Broker's maiden up here. He does a terrific job. You know, I remember when he left Chad, and Chad said to me, "Believe me, I did everything I could to convince him to stay." You know, but you're correct, Chad. I'm not going to say he sacrificed the winning, as it turned out, the trainer's title, because that would be unfair to Todd Fletcher, who had a tremendous meet and deserves all the credit for winning the training title. But listen, my art belongs to Daddy. Two wins, Rice Talk a win, but at least three right there, you know, and people who don't realize, those horses went to Jorge Abreu. You know, Carver Stable gave him 10 or 12 horses before the meet, and of course, my art belongs to Daddy is Larry Goichman. But, you know, that's okay. That's okay. You know, it's these titles have a little bragging rights for 10 minutes, you know, and they matter, but they don't, you know. There are more important things, I think, helping Jorge have his career, you know, improve is far more important than that. And I hope people notice the good job he did this summer, and it helps him get some more horses down the road. And that's a bigger thing than anything else.
I also want to mention, from limited starters, this may have gone unnoticed. Phil Serpy had 13 starts, had 3 wins in 2 seconds.
Well, he had Ampersand, who broke her maiden. He had Tipple, and he had that maiden, the 2-year-old that won. Yeah, no, that's hard, you know. obviously doesn't have a lot of horses to compete. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of people had decent meets, you know, right? I mean, besides Clamont, Maker winning 20 each, and Linda Rice had a very good meet. Bill Mott closed the meet with a flourish. You know, on the jockey side, I mean, obviously we talk so much about Irad and Jose, and justifiably so, and Joel Rosario had a sensational meet. But Luis Saez, you know, was tremendous when he finally came back after missing the first 6 days.
Yeah.
And he was dominant over the last couple of weeks with his aggressive riding. And he and Kieran, you know, have done a really great job together. They're a good team. And, you know, I sometimes wonder if Kieran is sometimes a bit of an influence on being a little more aggressive. Not that Luis wasn't a good aggressive rider in the past, but Kieran, a trainer that values speed as well. But I thought that Jose Lascano had a terrific meet.
Yes, he did. Good point.
Really, really rode well. And, you know, Jose's not somebody who's tied to the big barns by any stretch. So he's putting together, he and his agent put together, you know, sort of a patchwork of wins. And they did a great job. I thought Jose was riding really well. And I don't mean to say the exclusion of other riders who rode well, but I thought he had a particularly good meet. A little bit unnoticed because of how many, you know, he still didn't win half as many races as either of the Ortizes did, but, I don't know, to be fair, he didn't have the same kind of opportunities they did, and he made the most of it.
Well, Andy, you and the broadcast team made the most of it and provided all of us with tremendous coverage, and we'll look forward to getting down to Belmont and getting started. Take a few more days to relax after the intense work. I appreciate it, and the recap. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. We'll be back on Thursday the 17th covering Churchill, and then Friday the 18th, Belmont will open. But thanks. I appreciate all the kind words from so many people, and, you know, it's nice to have an opportunity to do a job like this. So, you know, it's a lot easier to start when somebody dumps the Saratoga races in your lap to be able to do a good job covering them. So, thanks.
Andy Serling, everybody, the New York Racing Association, the terrific numbers on the business side, and it was still a great summer, even though we really, you know, didn't get to enjoy all the aspects of it that we normally do. And it's been a great summer at Canterbury as well. And the Minnesota Breds get their opportunity. Brian Aragone for a few minutes to get everybody ready for tonight's action. Brian, good morning.
Thanks for having me on. What a transition from Andy Serling and the New York Racing Association right over to the cornfields in Minnesota. That's quite the transition you have.
Listen, it's perfect because, you know, for people that were playing Wednesdays and Thursdays, you played Saratoga, and then as Saratoga was getting wrapped up, you could move right on into Canterbury, and that's really been the case. And, you know, speaking of summers that went by fast, and of course, you know, we started late, but it's really been a success, Brian, and everybody there has done a tremendous job, and I think you know, the players responded. The low cost pick five has been a monster home run. I mean, so many things went right against all odds.
Absolutely, and I'm flattered to follow up Andy Serling with the New York Racing Association just finishing up. But at Canterbury Park, it's been an excellent meet with COVID and everything. You know, it's been difficult. We've become accustomed to 75-day racing meets, and now we're having 52 days. With this 10% takeout pick five, it's really been a thrill to see the simulcast players dive in and really support lowering takeout, and hopefully it catches on.
Well, and for those that have been playing, you know, they get the opportunity to look at this sequence that finishes with five stakes, and actually even before tonight's pick five gets going in race six, races six through ten, there's also the distaff sprint. First, where do we stand with weather, which has really been kind of vexing this week for you guys?
Yeah, we the rain is held off today. We did have plenty of rain, so the undercard will actually be off the turf. The stakes races remain on the turf.
Great.
We're not expecting any more rain today. But with a good, if not yielding, turf course, this could potentially see some massive payouts, in my opinion.
Ooh, all right. Well, then let's dive in quick. Before we look at the pick five, give us a quick glance at the distaff sprint.
Well, I'm thankful that the racing secretary listened to a lot of the bettors and, frankly, listened to the gamblers and put this race in the pick six versus the pick five. This is a race that many of us fought long and hard, knowing that Ready to Runaway would end up
right
here. Wanted to avoid having a 1-5 shot in the pick five sequence. That's oftentimes a payout killer. And I do think Ready to Runaway, who's 3-5 on the morning line, looks all of it. She's won 5 stakes since a $25,000 claim. She's the claim of a lifetime, especially for a Minnesotan, and could push her earnings well over $350,000 with a win in here. And I think she does it right around 6-10 tonight.
Let's move right into the pick five and the Blair's Cave. This is a 1/16 on what's probably yielding turf, 3 and ups, field of 8.
Yeah, this is a tricky race. This is an excellent race to kick off this 10% takeout pick five. I'm actually going to go to the old guy, and AP is Loose. Mac Robertson's got your 9-5 favorite, but he's also got AP is Loose, the 9-year-old, a Canterbury Classic here, but it's really about the distance, a very tiring surface with a good or yielding turf course, and you have a bunch of horses that have been going 7.5 furlongs, 1 mile, and I understand that the 9-year-old AP is Loose doesn't have the turn of foot that he used to have in his younger days. However, he does have a tank that rarely hits the bottom, and he just continues chugging along. He's been taking on open company recently, and I think AP is Loose is going to love the wet surface. He's going to love the extra distance, and when many of them are, you know, finding the bottom of those fumes or running on fumes that last 16th of a mile, I think AP is Loose is going to be rolling at potentially double-digit odds. But this is a race in the pick five that I would spread out. I do not trust Hotshot Kid at 9-5. I think you could potentially get off to an excellent start in the pick five right here.
How about Drop of Golden Sun? Got to be covered?
Absolutely, you have to. I mean, Drop of Golden Sun could be the new big thing in Minnesota. You know, last year, very quietly, won 4 races, was up for horse of the year, made over $115,000, and then this year has turned right around and beat Hotshot Kid, lost to Cinco Star, who we'll see later on in the card, but Drop the Golden Sun has really been everything that Tony Ringstorff could have ever dreamed for and does it on all surfaces, both on the turf as well as the dirt, and could be the pace setter that if the pace does stop, Drop the Golden Sun will get first run.
Let's look at the seventh, second leg, and I accidentally printed sideways, which I've got a new laptop, and every time I go to print, I've got a decide, you know, landscape or portrait. The Princess Elaine, Minnesota Distaff Turf.
Yeah, this is a race where I'm going to try and narrow it down a little bit. Clickbait is certainly the horse, but a lot of us are surprised that she's going on the turf. Most of her earnings, in fact, she hasn't missed the exacta on the dirt. A perfect 5-5 in the exacta on the dirt, but 0-1 on the turf. She could continue to improve. Second start over the turf course, and her breeding certainly is there for the turf as well with Clickbait. But First Mate is a horse who started the career on the dirt, actually took on Monomoy Girl in her younger days, and didn't fare very well against Monomoy Girl. But now, since moving to the turf, First Mate really has a nice turn of foot, especially on the turf. I don't think much of First Mate on the dirt, but this is a turf horse through and through. She's shown it recently, winning the Minnesota Distaff against many of these in the past. And First Mate is a horse I'm going to key in on, but I will also throw in number 8, Honey Socks Appeal.
Yeah.
This is the class of the field. Bernal Roan, Bob Lindgren. He took his champion mare away from Mac Robertson, 13-time trainer of the year, moved over to the Bernal Roan barn. It's a story that I would love to be a fly on the wall of how this came to be, especially after making $400,000. But while I may not know the story, I do know that Honey Socks Appeal is the juicy 8-1 on the morning line and is intriguing at best.
I completely agree. Got to use all 3 of those. The big bulky field, too. So the 7th, second leg, the Princess Elaine. Then we turn to the 2-year-olds for a couple of races. And the Northern Lights Futurity, going to go 6 on the main track. We got a group of 9. Westa Waverly, your 5-2 favorite.
Yeah, I mean, look at the jockeys jumping around in this race. And I follow jockeys probably more than I should, but I can't stress this enough to the followers. Every year, year after year, Minnesota Festival of Champions Day comes up, and the 2-year-olds especially weird things happen. They're still developing each and every morning they wake up. They're getting better, bigger, stronger. And we typically see the two-year-old favorites get heavily overbet, and then the race falls apart. None of them have ever gone, or very few of them have gone six furlongs. You know, Fire Extinguisher at 4-1 is going to be heavily bet. Western Waverly off of that MTA Sales Graduate Futurity victory is going to be bet. This is a race I'm going to spread out. I'm not very, I don't have a very strong opinion in this race, but I am going to try and beat your two favorites. Sneaky Diversion. Speaking of diversions, I couldn't imagine this was the plan all along for number five to be training at Arlington Park, shipping into Canterbury, winning like a good thing, and then coming back on 8 days rest. I did talk to Joel Burnt yesterday, our leading trainer. Looks like he's going to be the champion here in 2020, and I asked him about the jockey change from Rye Eckleberry. And he just said, you know, Rye Eckleberry's loyal to the Hall of Fame trainer, Francisco Bravo. He completely understands it. He's excited to get Dean Butler, called him a money rider, and no issues, completely understanding. So I think Sneaky Diversion, despite, you know, the short layoff, he is doing so well that he turns right around and runs for the big money.
Got to mention Fire Extinguisher, who I think is an imperative, obviously, in here. Mentioning
Absolutely.
Bravo.
I just didn't know what to do with Fire Extinguisher. Francisco Bravo, he's got multiple horses in here. He owns and trains and actually bred this horse as well.
Yeah.
The two-year-old guy, Latin Heat, is bred to be awfully quick, but, you know, that last furlong could be a little bit dicey. Ran incredibly professional August 3rd, but we'll see how that one transitions. I agree. Based on replays and what I've seen, Fire Extinguisher was hands down the most impressive we've seen. However, things could be a little bit different. Now drawing down towards the inside. Last time broke from the ninth post in a 10-horse field. Now down near the inside. We'll see how Fire Extinguisher handles adversity today.
Then the debutante, the girls get their turn. And kind of funny, we get next to each other. Hell of the North and Star of the North, both deserve, you know, serious consideration. And Molly's Angel, part of this conversation as well. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think, like Fire Extinguisher, Molly's Angel is the most impressive. Many people are going to key in on that 13-length defeat, or that she put on the rest of the field, winning by 13 lengths and looking incredibly well that day. But this is another horse I think is going to be overbet. Now, may likely win, but for me, playing pick fours and pick fives, the value won't be there. I'm going to take a stand against, but will be on my tickets. I like, you know, the Star of the North and Hell of the North. I don't love the post position, especially for Hell of the North. I know the buyer came up a little bit light. I know the fractions aren't all that quick, but in a field of seven, was bet down to favoritism that day. Runaway A-Train, the second-place finisher, had experience, ran up to the throat latch of Hell of the North, and when Dean Butler chirped at her, she really responded incredibly well. So I'm throwing out the final times and going with what my eyes saw with Hell of the North on top.
Excellent. And the anchor leg and the Minnesota Sprint, just a group of six, but a pretty well-matched group of six.
Yeah, I mean, many people thought this is a race where Hotshot Kid was going to land and Mr. Jägermeister. Now, Mr. Jägermeister got turned out for the rest of the year. He'll be coming back next year. And then Hotshot Kid went elsewhere. And this is a race that turned out short on numbers, but really long on talent. And I believe that any one of these ones can win, with the exception, I'm not a huge fan of Weekend Ride. 9-2 morning line, the three-year-old taking on older, is going to be a pitch for me. On pick five tickets, I will go 2, 5, and 6. I think Ray